Hello. Welcome to the second hour of the reading of the Arizona Republic for Tuesday, September 16th, 2025. I'm Gene, a volunteer reader with Sun Sounds of Arizona. We begin the second hour by reading the obituaries. Today's list includes the following names: Judy Burns, 79, of Phoenix; Margaret Jean Godden, 79, of Scottsdale; Jonathan Oren Morrow, 70, of Queen Valley; Frank C. Rivera, 81, of Phoenix; and Danny Ray Thomas, 65, of Phoenix. Sun Sounds of Arizona extends its condolences to the families and friends of today's listings. Now we'll turn to the business section of the paper. There are three articles there. The first one is entitled, Study Uses AI to Simulate Fed Meeting. This is written by Lika Kihara for the Reuters News Group, and it comes out of Tokyo, Japan. A simulated Federal Reserve meeting, which used artificial intelligence agents modeled on real-life policymakers, showed political pressure polarized members of the board in their rate-setting deliberations. In a study that was released on August 31st, academics at George Washington University simulated a Federal Open Market Committee meeting using AI agents modeled on each member based on their historical policy stances, biographies, and speeches. The AI, FOMC, was then made to process real-time economic data and financial news in order to reach a decision. The findings show that when political pressure is applied, the AI agents became fragmented and dissent is more common, according to the paper by Sophia Kazanik and Tara Sinclair. In the paper, they wrote, quote, "This simulation shows that the Federal Reserve is only partially insulated from politics. Outside scrutiny can shape internal decision-making, even in an institution guided by formal rules," unquote. Well, the simulation replicates the July 2025 FOMC meeting. While few central banks may be ready to have AI agents set monetary policy, a growing number of them are using the technology to streamline operations. The Fed conducted research using generative AI models to analyze minutes of FOMC meetings. The European Central Bank uses machine learning models to forecast euro area inflation. The Bank of Japan uses AI to gather information and deepen economic analysis. Research that it published back in December used large language models to show how key factors driving up prices may be shifting to labor cost from raw material prices. Australia's central bank is testing a new AI tool that gives summaries on policy-related analytical questions, according to its governor, Michelle Bullock, who said that on September 3rd. Central banks see strategic importance in AI and are actively experimenting on data retrieval and analysis, according to a report from the Bank for International Settlements back in April. And that was the article, Study Uses AI to Simulate Fed Meeting. Our second article from the business section, Kraft Heinz's Decision to Split May Be Too Late. This was written by Jessica DiNapoli, Jessica DiNapoli from Reuters News Group out of New York. Kraft Heinz's announcement earlier in September that it would split was a belated acknowledgement that the Velveeta cheese and Heinz ketchup maker had missed consumers' years-long shift away from processed foods, a trend that is now accelerating under a new push from the federal government and states, including California. But its plan to carve itself into two companies, one focused on faster-growing sauces and condiments, and one on groceries, it may not be enough to revive its brands, according to former employees and consultants and Wall Street analysts. The rise of the Make America Healthy Again movement, led by Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who blames artificial ingredients for chronic childhood diseases like diabetes and obesity, poses a new threat for the company that makes products including Oscar Mayer hot dogs and Kraft Singles and Jell-O desserts. Former employees said Kraft Heinz executives missed opportunities to appeal to the new demand for fewer preservatives and artificial ingredients, such as ketchup, without high fructose corn syrup. And they were also unconvinced the costly and possibly risky effort to change an iconic brand would boost sales. Kraft Heinz is focused on providing nutritious and affordable food and has reduced its use of sugar, overhauled over 1,000 recipes, and committed to removing synthetic dyes from its U.S. brands, according to a spokesperson. The MAHA Commission, a panel convened by President Donald Trump, released a report on September 9th that called for the government to review chemical additives in packaged products and define ultra-processed foods. Adding to the pressure, legislators in California are voting on a bill that would regulate ultra-processed foods as soon as this month. Nicholas Faraday, an independent food industry analyst, said the prospects for Kraft Heinz after a split are still bleak. He said, quote, "The very fact that they are splitting up doesn't change any of it and explain how they are going to inject energy, excitement, and clarity," unquote. But its rising competition, including the sauce and pasta brand Rao's Homemade, that's R-A-O, Homemade, is adapting more quickly to consumer taste, according to food industry experts, and it's snapping up market share from its top products like Kraft Mac and Cheese, which is known for its blue box featuring orange-hued macaroni. U.S. food companies have struggled to increase sales in recent years as consumers switch to products touting natural ingredients, and they balk at higher prices, and they buy less due to new appetite-suppressing GLP-1 drugs. But Kraft Heinz has been among the worst performers, analysts have said. Its shares are down nearly 14% year-to-date, while the Dow Jones U.S. Food Product Makers Index, covering its competitors, has fallen about 6.5% in the same time period. Its organic net sales have declined for the last 7 quarters, according to financial statements and investor press releases. 2 former Kraft Heinz employees, who requested anonymity because they were not authorized to speak to the press on behalf of the company, said that it knew for years that it was facing a seismic shift in consumer preference as offerings at natural food grocery stores like Amazon's Whole Foods and Sprouts rose in popularity. But one of the employees, who's a marketing executive who left the company over a year ago, said, quote, "Management wanted us to prove we would grow sales by changing ingredients," unquote, and was reactive to trends rather than proactive. Kraft Heinz looked at replacing high fructose corn syrup in Heinz ketchup with cane sugar. But the former executive said, quote, "It was killed due to cost," unquote. Kraft did not comment when asked about replacing high fructose corn syrup in ketchup. Heinz ketchup's market has slipped over the past 4 years, though it still holds more than 2/3 of the category in the United States, according to market research firm Euromonitor. The company offers a Simply Heinz ketchup without high fructose corn syrup for a cost of nearly 50% more than the original, and in 2019 acquired condiment maker Primal Kitchen, which also pledges to avoid artificial ingredients. The company spokesperson said that the last quarter, its Simply Heinz brand grew 17% and Primal Kitchen grew 24%. High fructose corn syrup has become more controversial, although medical experts say people should reduce sugar intake overall and that there is no significant health difference between the additive and cane sugar. A May report from the MAHA Commission, that's M-A-H-A Commission, said that significant consumption of high fructose corn syrup may contribute to chronic diseases such as obesity, citing a 2021 study by researchers from Shanghai University of Traditional Chinese Medicine, linking it to non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. In response to California's bill on ultra-processed food, a spokesperson for HHS said Kennedy encourages states to promote healthy practices and enhance consumer transparency in food labeling. Other U.S. states, including Missouri, North Carolina, and Pennsylvania, have considered passing similar laws. The former employees said that Kraft Heinz moves to remove artificial ingredients from its products did little to change consumers' perception of them as unhealthy and processed. And that was the article entitled, Kraft Heinz's Decision to Split May Be Too Late. Our third and final article from the business section, UK on Weak Start to Year's Second Half, written by David Milliken and Subhan Abdullah for the Reuters News Group, comes to us out of London. Britain's economy recorded 0 monthly growth in July after a sharp drop in factory output, matching expectations for a slower start to the second half of 2025, but still disappointing for the government ahead of November's budget. After a strong first half to the year, economists expect growth to slow over the second half as a whole, as U.S. tariffs continue to weigh on the global economy and Britain faces headwinds from rising inflation and uncertainty over who will be hit by likely tax hikes later this year. Finance Minister Rachel Reeves said on September 11th that the economy, quote, isn't broken, but it does feel stuck, unquote, as she set out measures to streamline part of the tax system. The September 12th data showed that manufacturing output, which makes up 9% of the economy, it dropped by a hefty 1.3% for the month in July. That was its biggest fall in a year. And it was led by computers, electronics, and pharmaceuticals, according to the Office for National Statistics. But the much larger services sector edged up 0.1% for the month, which was slightly ahead of expectations in a Reuters poll. GDP has risen 0.4 of a month over month in June and on a 3-month basis, which is now the ONS's preferred way of presenting the figures. Growth slowed to 0.2% in the 3 months to July. That was down from 0.3% in the second quarter. Suren Thiru, who is economics director at the ICAEW accountancy body, said, quote, July's slowdown is probably the start of a more restrained period for the economy, with higher inflation and rising job losses likely to have stifled activity in August, despite an expected uplift from the warm weather, unquote. Financial markets continued to price in only around a 40% chance of another Bank of England rate cut this year, with inflation in September expected to hit double the BOE's 2% target. Britain's economy grew robustly by its recent standards in the first half of 2025, expanding by 0.7% in the first quarter of the year and 0.3% in the second, and that was partly due to higher government spending and exporters trying to ship goods before the U.S. imposed tariffs. The September 12th figures showed Britain's goods trade deficit widened in July to its largest since January of 2022, up from $30 billion in June to $30.2 billion in July. British goods exports to the U.S. remain below pre-tariff levels, although the widening in the deficit from June to July mostly reflected higher imports from the European Union. On an annual basis, gross domestic product in July was 1.4% higher than a year earlier. That's unchanged from June's annual growth rate, but it's a shade lower than the 1.5% growth that was forecast in a Reuters poll. In August, before the release of second quarter data, the Bank of England forecast annual growth of 1.25% for this year, which was well below the average of 2% between the years of 2010 and 2019. And that was the article, UK on Weak Start to Year's Second Half. And those were our three articles from the business section of the paper. Coming up on 16 minutes past the hour, we're going to move on over to the sports section. From the front page of the sports section, the article underneath a big picture of looks like five Diamondbacks players. The title in the above the picture is Back in the Hunt. This was written by Nick Pecoro for the Arizona Republic. When they peeled five veterans off their roster at the trade deadline, the Diamondbacks were a team in free fall. Their season had been a disappointment, and nothing that happened the rest of the way figured to change that. Instead, 6 weeks later, the Diamondbacks opened a 9-game homestand on Monday, September 15th, with something that few could have imagined. They have a chance to make the playoffs. Right-hander Zach Gallen said, quote, "If you would have told us on August 1st that with 2 weeks to play, we were going to have a shot, I think you'd have had a lot of guys sign up for it. I just said, give us meaningful baseball the last week of the season. That's not too much to ask. We'll see what happens." Unquote. Well, the Diamondbacks open a 3-game series with the San Francisco Giants, just 2 games out of a wild card spot, with 12 games left in the season. That they are in this position is the result of a confluence of factors. Their starting pitching has stabilized. Their defense is much improved. Their offense has continued to produce. It has added up to a 24-win and 17-loss record since the start of August. But they have benefited from factors that are out of their control as well, namely the play of the New York Mets, who, over their past half-season worth of games, have played at a 98-loss pace. It has allowed a team such as the Diamondbacks, who entered their homestand with a 75-win, 75-loss record, they have not been more than a game over 500 since June 25th, well, it allows them to remain a contender. Take last week. The Diamondbacks went just 2-for-4, but managed to gain 2.5 games on the Mets, because the Mets went 0-7. Diamondbacks right fielder Corbin Carroll said, quote, "We're playing some good teams and winning some games. But a lot of it, too, is what the other teams are doing right now, and they're kind of giving us a chance. At this point, we're in it. We're just going to keep taking it a day at a time and trying to get to go 1-0. Unquote. Well, in the week leading up to the deadline, the Diamondbacks traded right-hander Merrill Kelly, third baseman Eugenio Suarez, first baseman Josh Naylor, outfielder Randall Grichuk, and reliever Shelby Miller, all of whom had been significant contributors this season. Amazingly, the Diamondbacks have not missed any of them all that much, if at all. Their defense has improved in part because of the emergence of Blaze Alexander, who has played well both at third base and in occasional games in left field and center field. Alexander, who bounces around the field and clubhouse like a puppy, but has also provided a sort of infectious energy, it seems to transfer to others. Diamondbacks manager Torey Lovullo said, quote, "I think we got athletic. We got very young, and I think certain players gave us a certain energy, and they've gone out there and really performed at a great level. Defensively, we got real good. I think that helped our pitching." Unquote. Gallen, who has a 2.83 ERA, and left-hander Eduardo Rodriguez, with a 3.63 ERA, have been far more effective since the deadline. And right-hander Nabil Chrismat, 2.70 ERA, who signed as a minor league free agent in the second week of August, has been a godsend since moving into the rotation, essentially giving the Diamondbacks similar results as Kelly. Now, the club still has questions. Most of them are centered on the bullpen, a problem spot throughout the season. It still remains unreliable, and the upcoming schedule is not forgiving. The Diamondbacks have four series left, all of them against contending clubs, the Giants, the Philadelphia Phillies, the Los Angeles Dodgers, and the San Diego Padres. Now, they won't face either of the Giants' two top starters, Logan Webb and Robbie Ray, nor are they lined up to face the Phillies' top arms of Christopher Sanchez and Ranger Suarez. But the Diamondbacks believe something else might be working in their favor, something reminiscent of their run to the World Series back in 2023. Back then, after backing into the playoffs, the Diamondbacks spoke openly about how little pressure they felt in October, given the absence of expectation. Several players said over the weekend that same phenomenon might be in effect following the trade deadline sell-off. Reliever Ryan Thompson said, quote, "This is very reminiscent of 2023, of just we're not really supposed to be the team that makes the push that we did. We kind of wore that with pride at being the underdogs. I feel like maybe some of the pressure was lifted on all sides at the trade deadline. That helped us just play with freedom. I think whatever teams are playing the most free are the teams that win. We are all talented. I think we're playing with a lot of freedom right now," unquote. And that was the article, Back in the Hunt, from the front page of the sports section. Also from the front page of the sports section, this next article is entitled, Mercury Looking to Avoid Playoff Exit Against Liberty. This was written by Dana Scott for the Arizona Republic. Brianna Stewart was in obvious pain while on the bench late in overtime of the New York Liberty's 76-69 win over the Phoenix Mercury, back in the first game of their WNBA opening round playoff series on September 14th at Phoenix Arena. The Liberty All-Star and former MVP suffered a left knee injury when she landed awkwardly while making a layup and drawing a foul, putting New York ahead 70-65 with 3 minutes and 1 second left to play. Stewart, who finished with 18 points on 50% shooting, 6 rebounds, 4 assists, and 2 steals, did not return as the game slipped away from Phoenix. There was no immediate confirmation as to whether she will return for Game 2 of the 3-game series on September 17th in New York. Liberty coach Sandy Brondello said after Game 1, quote, "We'll just be hoping that she'll be okay," unquote. Stewart underwent an MRI on her left knee on September 15th, according to ESPN. No injury report was released by the Liberty for Game 2. Stewart did miss 13 games during the regular season this year with an injury to her right knee. Now, Stewart's potential absence in Game 2 would be a major factor for New York that could help the Mercury, who are in a win-or-go-home situation. Phoenix earned home court in the opening round as the number 4 seed in the playoffs. The defending champion Liberty are number 5. Game 2 will tip off at 5:30 p.m. and will be televised on ESPN. Now, even without Stewart, the Mercury cannot afford to let their former starting point guard, Natasha Cloud, have another performance like she had in Game 1. Cloud was traded to Connecticut last offseason for Phoenix's MVP candidate, Alyssa Thomas, who had 14 points, 9 rebounds, 8 assists, and 1 steal in Game 1. Then, Cloud was flipped in another trade to New York. Cloud recorded game highs of 23 points and 4 steals in Game 1 She shot 9 of 12 from the field, including 3 from deep. She added 5 assists and 6 rebounds. Cloud said about Stewart's status after Game 1, quote, "We're always concerned. This is a closed locker room inside. We care about Stewie more than just the basketball player. She did her job today. She got us to a dub. But we're concerned about her. We don't know anything yet, but we have the next man up mentality," unquote. Cloud stepped up for the Liberty's other star, Sabrina Ionescu, who was locked up by the Mercury's Monique Okoa-Makani with 8 points, 2 assists in Game 1's second half. Ionescu, who had 16 points, 7 assists, and 6 rebounds, is known as one of the league's top clutch performers, but she was held scoreless from 7 minutes and 37 seconds in the fourth quarter through overtime. Ionescu said, "The great thing is I'm not just a scorer. I was able to continue to facilitate and find ways to help us to win," unquote. Mercury coach Nate Tibbetts praised the defensive effort on Ionescu by his starting point guard, who was named to the Associated Press All-Rookies First Team. He said, quote, "Mo has was probably a little bit overlooked with some of the other great players that we have on our team. What she has done as a rookie in this league is super impressive. The way she battled against Sabrina is what we're going to need to win this series. And she has been up to every challenge we've put in front of her. I'm just super proud of how she has competed," unquote. Tibbetts said Phoenix simply got outplayed in overtime. They shot 22% to the Liberty's 50%. Mercury All-Star Satu Sabali hit just 2 of 17 for 9 points. She also had 8 rebounds and 3 steals. Phoenix was out-rebounded against the bigger Liberty, 48-31 overall. Now, the Mercury won their regular season series against the Liberty 3-1, but New York was not fully healthy in most of those meetings. Well, regardless of the Game 2 outcome, Tibbetts is proud of the team's improvement from 19 wins last season, finishing just 2 wins shy of tying their franchise record of 29 wins that was set back in 2014. Tibbetts said, quote, "Listen, I've been extremely proud of our group all season long. No one's picking us to win this series. I know we believe in us, and so this is our journey, right? This was our first playoff game together. We went toe-to-toe with the defending champs and had a chance to win. I'm super proud of how we competed and gave ourselves a chance to win at the end, and I know the group will expect to bounce back in New York," unquote. And that was the article, Mercury Looking to Avoid Playoff Exit Against Liberty. Our third article from the front page of the sports section, Sun Devils Face Texas Teams in Brutal 6-Week Span. This was written by Greg Moore for the Arizona Republic. Arizona State football is 1-0 against teams from the Lone Star State. But the Sun Devils are going to be Texas toast in the national rankings and college football playoff picture if they don't keep it up for the next month or so. 4 of the next 5 games against programs from the second largest U.S. state. Kenny Dillingham, however, isn't about to get into all of that. Dillingham said on Monday, September 15th, quote, "We play Baylor in Waco on Saturday, September 20th. We're focused on Baylor. That's 100% the focus. Whoever we play after Baylor, we will play them, and so be it. But we are 100% focused on Baylor. That's a good football team," unquote. Well, since we're not football coaches, we can peek ahead to get a sense of the magnitude of this game and how it fits into the bigger picture of this season. If it's true that everything is bigger in Texas, that certainly applies to the level of football competition. Forget the records. Forget the rankings. The state of Texas had 199 players on NFL rosters in Week 1, by far the most of any state. With a recruiting base that rich, every team from the Armadillo State has a chance to roll on any team at any time. Dillingham said, quote, toughness and the love of game. You can find a lot of those guys in Texas with just how much football matters in the state of Texas, unquote. Now, ASU will face Baylor, TCU, Texas Tech, and Houston between now and Halloween. That's even scarier when you consider that three of the next six teams on the schedule are ranked in the USA Today U.S. LBM Coaches Poll. Utah, number 18, Texas Tech, number 16, and Iowa State, number 13. ASU is either one play against Mississippi State from being ranked in the top 10, or voters were correct in dropping the Sun Devils from the top 25, even after an impressive win against Texas State. Whichever you think it is, the Sun Devils are about to get the chance to prove it. It's part of why Dillingham isn't about to get into rankings and polls and all of that. Dillingham said, quote, nope, I don't care. There are teams that are picked 103rd that are some of the top 25 teams in the country, unquote. You could almost hear Dillingham cough and say, us, last year. This year, well, Baylor could win the Hindsight 2020 award, if such an award existed. The Bears ripped off six wins in a row to close out the 2024 regular season, and a 43-yard Hail Mary pass from Shadur Sanders up in Boulder might have been the difference that gave ASU a spot in the Big 12 title game. Who can remember with all of those tiebreakers? The Baylor program got a lot of those players to return for 2025, including quarterback Sawyer Robinson, who currently leads the Big 12 in completions with 85 and yards passing 1,070. Baylor also has an impressive double overtime win at SMU, yet another Texas team, which was ranked number 17th at the time. Baylor was down 38-24 with about 8 minutes left in regulation before Robinson hit the Mustangs defense for a pair of deep touchdowns to tie the game with about 30 seconds to go. Still, for all that Dillingham is facing, he believes in his guys. He said, quote, it's the passion they play with, starting in the second half against Mississippi. The way we pushed the pile, the way we ran to the football, the way they communicated. They came back the next week and they went straight back to work. There was no blinking. There was no flinching. It was just, let's get better again. I feel like we kind of found ourselves in that second half, and now we've got to continue to build from that, unquote. Well, Arizona is looking to go 2-0 deep in the heart of Texas. Otherwise, it's going to be a long, hard road back to Dallas to defend their Big 12 title. And that was Sun Devils face Texas team in brutal 6 week span. Our final front page article from the sports section. Gannon quiet on injuries. Harrison needs his touches. Written by Theo Mackey for the Arizona Republic. Jonathan Gannon remained mum on the status of his injured cornerbacks during his weekly Monday news conference. All three of the Arizona Cardinals' starting cornerbacks exited their Week 2 win over the Carolina Panthers and did not return. Max Melton, knee, left in the first quarter after a tackle on Tetaroa McMillan. Will Johnson, with a groin injury, left in the fourth after pulling up on a coverage that represented Garrett Rep. And then Garrett Williams left with a knee injury after a collision with Budda Baker on a fourth-quarter touchdown. Gannon said, quote, kind of still running those tests, guys being evaluated still, so I'll probably have more information later on in the week, unquote. Gannon next meets with reporters on Wednesday, September 17th, ahead of the Cardinals' first practice of the week. Gannon did confirm that Johnson did not return after the injury. Johnson previously left the game with trainers and did return, but on that play, he just, quote, got the wind knocked out of him, unquote. And then Gannon said the groin injury came later in the afternoon. So in place of Melton, the Cardinals inserted fifth-round rookie Denzel Burke. Third-round corner Catrell Clark entered for Johnson, while the Cardinals moved safety Jalen Thompson over to nickel to cover for Williams. Gannon said, "I have all the faith in the world with Catrell, and he played well." His review of Burke was more mixed. Gannon said, quote, "After not playing a snap in week one, he played 67 plays, so that's a lot of snaps. I think he will take a jump from this last week to the next time he plays. He will play better. But I thought he did a good job. There was one coverage where he was a little late to get in on the right person. And had that one foul, the bang-bang play on a two-point play. But I thought he made some plays, too, so that was encouraging. He's here for a reason. It was good," unquote. After a 71-yard day in Week 1, Marvin Harrison Jr. finished with just two catches for 27 yards on five targets against the Panthers. Gannon expressed some frustration with his lack of involvement. Gannon said, "He needs his touches. I know that, for us to be effective overall as an offense." Gannon, though, also played down the importance of Harrison's target totals, offering something of a mixed message. Gannon said, quote, "I never really looked at targets as what needs to happen. The ball's going to go where the balls go. I know he has a certain number of plays that he's the read in. If they decide to play a coverage, they have a say, too. If they decide to play a coverage that the ball's not going to go there, it's not going to go there. So with saying that, I think he needs to touch the football for our offense to be at its premium," unquote. On a third down and long from the Panthers' 12-yard line in the fourth quarter, Murray rolled to his left and attempted to pass. He was hit as he threw, though, that popped his pass directly into the arms of a defender for his first turnover of the season. Immediately after the game, Murray said he was trying to throw the ball away. But given the situation, Gannon said Murray should have taken a sack. Gannon said, quote, "He didn't want to lose the yardage. But where we're at on the field in the red zone, yeah, every yard you go backwards, there's a percentage that it downticks to make the field goal. But at that point, it's not like we were out of field goal range. Just probably eat that one. That's what I told him today," unquote. Despite the consternation over the Cardinals nearly blowing a pair of fourth-quarter leads in their first two games, they are 2-0, exactly where they would want to be in the standings, Gannon highlighted two areas that have made that possible. The first was Murray's performances. Quote, "For how many plays we had on offense, the amount of explosives we had, that's a big-time thing," unquote, Gannon said. And then he went on and said, quote, "And it's not through the ground, it's through the pass game. So that's good. I think Kyler's playing extremely well," unquote. The Cardinals had five pass plays of at least 15 yards on just 25 attempts. Three of those went to his tight ends, Trey McBride and Elijah Higgins. The other area Gannon highlighted was the impact plays on defense. Gannon said, quote, "We showed this last game. It was good to see us affect the ball. We win the takeaway battle there, and it ended up being 2-1, but you typically win a lot of games when you do that. So that's good to see. Our mode of play is on display." And that was the article, Gannon Quiet on Injuries. Harrison Needs His Touches. Well, we've got time for one more article. Let's see. We have to turn the front page of the sports section over. Let's take a look at some other articles. Well, here's something about golf and the Ryder Cup. It's entitled, European Team Does Recon at Bethpage. It was written by Adam Shupak for the Golf Week magazine, which is part of the USA Today network. After finishing up the BMW PGA Championship on Sunday in England, 11 members of the European Ryder Cup and their caddies and Captain Luke Donald boarded a flight for New York, where they met up with teammate Sepp Straka for a two-day reconnaissance trip to Bethpage Black, which is the site of the 45th Ryder Cup. Donald said, quote, "We plan to play 9 holes on Monday and 18 holes on Tuesday. We'll go into the city for a fun dinner Tuesday night, because we don't get to go into the city during the week of the Ryder Cup. It's obviously on the doorstep, but it's just far enough away and so busy that week. It's nice to experience where we are, that New York kind of vibe." Unquote. According to Donald, members of the team are going to stay on the East Coast to adjust to the time change. That's a 5-hour difference from the Irish Open and the BMW PGA Championship of the past 2 weeks. Some of them will be playing together in the New York area ahead of the Ryder Cup, which begins on September 26th. Quote, "Some people are sticking together up in New York. Some people are going to work with their coaches. Some people are going home. It's not all 12 together doing the same thing. I think it's important. You don't want to. They are together a lot this week. If you were all together next week and the week after, well, maybe that's a little overkill, as long as they're not flying back to Europe and have to deal with jet lag. I don't really mind what they do." Unquote. Donald said that the trip 2 years ago was a pivotal part of meshing as a team that won the biennial competition 16.5 to 11.5, so they're running it back. Captain Donald explained, quote, "It's one thing that I think worked very well for us in Rome. We had never really had an organized practice trip before. Sort of the building of a unified team really started again on that. I think it was a Monday between Irish and Wentworth, so the Monday of Wentworth we went over and sort of started to form as a team then." In Rome, he gathered the team around a fire pit during the first night of their practice session as an exercise in team building and creating the right culture for the team. Donald kicked things off by telling the story of his start in golf and what the Ryder Cup had come to mean to him, and then everyone from John Rahm to Rory McIlroy to rookie Ludvig Åberg took their turn. Donald said, "I sort of passed it around. I started with John, went to Rory, and it just sort of started to flow, you know. And then some people didn't give too much away, but some people really opened up. And what it really did was it made a lot of the rookies understand that a lot of their upbringing in golf was exactly the same as the superstars. They had something in common. They were playing because a lot of sacrifice from their parents, because some people were told that they weren't good enough and they needed to prove themselves. It was amazing, like kind of just the emotion and the conversation that happened. I didn't really know what to expect and how it was going to go and whether these guys would kind of buy into it. And it was amazing in the end. By the time we got back to the Ryder Cup, we were already a team. We were rolling." I think, again, Ryder Cups, sometimes at the beginning of the week, you feel like you're sort of trying to find your place and figure out what the plan is. And I think a lot of those decisions and team building was sort of done the week before or 2 weeks before. It's very important, and it'll be very important this time around, unquote. Shane Lowry echoed that sentiment and said, quote, "I think it's important, and we showed how important it was the last time. I think we got together, we did our trip to Rome, and then when we arrived in Rome for the Ryder Cup, it felt like we had never been apart. It felt like we just sort of floated into the week and cruised into the week. Yeah, it is a big part of it. Obviously, to get to see the golf course outside of the mayhem of Ryder Cup week is very important as well. When you get to a Ryder Cup week, it's just a bit different, and it's just not the same as a normal week. Practice rounds are a little bit more challenging than normal, and yeah, it will be nice to see. I think we're playing a couple of rounds that week. It'll be nice to see the golf course and kind of figure out a game plan for how we're going to play. I'm sure by then we'll know who we're going to play with, or to a certain extent anyway. But yeah, those trips are very, very important." Unquote. That was the article, "European Team Does Recon at Bethpage." Well, we're coming up on 45 minutes past the hour, so we're going to leave the sports section and move on over to the entertainment section. We're going to begin by reading today's horoscopes. So let's begin with the sign of Aries, birth dates from March 21st to April 19th. Are you insisting that someone else be responsible for your well-being? Hold space for your own needs. For Taurus, birth dates from April 20th to May 20th, mental noise may be occupying precious brain space. Are these the voices of fears that you have not faced yet? For Geminis, birth dates from May 21st to June 21st, undervaluing yourself to fit in will no longer do. The Cancer moon insists that you feel into where you belong. For Cancer, birth dates from June 22nd through July 22nd, do you feel like your emotions are intensifying? Your home and professional life battle against one another while you get caught in the middle. For Leos, birth dates from July 23rd through August 22nd. Are you tasting your foot in your mouth? Oh, hidden emotions may erupt aggressively. For you fellow Virgos out there with birth dates from August 23rd through September 22nd, is your desire to connect worth sacrificing your boundaries? Be aware of crossed lines. For Libras, September 23rd through October 23rd birth dates, protecting your ambitions is top priority today. But does winning at all cost involve damaging your ties? For Scorpio, October 24th through November 21st birth dates, hidden frustrations may boil beneath the surface. Seek higher truths to find solace. For Sagittarius, November 22nd through December 21st birth dates, are your friendship conflicts triggering a self-expression wound? The Cancer moon stirs up deep emotional content to sort through and learn from. For Capricorns, December 22nd through January 19th birth dates, dealing with others may be irritating. Can you lead with compassion when your buttons are pushed? Count to 10. Aquarius, January 20th to February 18th birth dates, it may feel as if life is throwing things at you. Are you growing restless while your to-do list grows exponentially? And for Pisces, birth dates from February 19th to March 20th, pleasure can feel distant when financial tensions occupy your emotional energy. And those were today's horoscopes. We turn now to letters of advice written by Abigail Van Buren in her column, Dear Abby. The first letter goes like this. Dear Abby, our neighbors, Wanda and Bob, have agreed to care for our house and cat when we vacation. We told them we would like to pay them for their troubles, but Wanda says they want to do it for free. Bob just smiles. Judging by her body language, Wanda seemed offended when I asked her how much she'd like to be paid. You see, I'm sure we can return the favor if they leave town, but we have the means and time to vacation more often than they do. I don't want to offend, but neither do I want to take advantage. In our area, there aren't any house-watching services. I'm stumped. What's a neighbor to do in this instance? Signed, Getting Away in Oregon. And Abby responds, Dear Getting Away, it appears that Wanda and her husband prefer to enjoy the benefits of practicing the good neighbor policy rather than focus on monetary reward. Approach Wanda and tell her you appreciate her willingness to watch your place while you travel, and reiterate that you would be pleased to do the same for her and her husband when the opportunity arises. While you are away, if you see an item you think they would enjoy, present it to them upon your return. I'm thinking something characteristic of where you have been. The next letter goes like this. Dear Abby, our grandson is 28. We struggled a lot with him growing up. He lived with us. His parents never married. His mother went to prison for 10 years. He has a job, but always asks us for money. We give him about $400 a month. My husband and I have a lot of arguments over it. Our grandson also has a girlfriend and 4 children who live with him. We are retired, and this is draining us. I feel sorry for that little family, but my own family is sinking. Have you any advice? Signed, Reached the Limit in Texas. And Abby responds, Dear Reached, oh, I certainly do. Turn off the money spigot before your generosity gets you in more trouble than you are already experiencing. You have been more than generous with this grandson. You do not owe him $400 a month. As an adult, it's time for him to take care of his own family, just as it is with you and your husband. We have a third letter today. Dear Abby, my company has a 4-day-a-week return-to-office mandate this year. Now, while it's nice to have the in-person camaraderie, co-workers who are conspicuously ill are now coming in and spreading their contagion. My company provides a generous 2 weeks of occasional absence, which may be used for sick days and doctor's appointments and such. I am now sick at home. These co-workers are not heroes for coming into work with their germs, but selfish and inconsiderate. Nobody objects. I feel I should say something to our office manager. What do you suggest? Signed, Sick of Sick Co-workers. And Abby responds, Dear Sick, speak to the office manager and suggest that a memo be sent out stating that if someone is feeling unwell, they should wear a mask or stay home until their symptoms subside. Many businesses do it. And those were our 3 letters of advice written by Abigail Van Buren. Remember, you can always contact Abigail by going to her website, www.dearabby.com. And now we have time for some comics. In the comic strip Blondie, drawn by Dean Young and John Marshall, Dagwood and Blondie are in bed, and Dagwood says, Oh, I can't sleep. And Blondie doesn't even look at him and says, Listening to a podcast might help you fall asleep. Dagwood sits up in bed in the next frame and says, Well, I tried that, but the only podcasts I listen to are about food, and they'd keep me up all night. And that was Blondie. And in the comic strip Zits, drawn by Jerry Scott and Jim Borgman, in the first frame, Jeremy, the high school boy or college boy, the younger son, is trying to put on his shoes, and his mom's yelling, Jeremy, you're going to be late for school. And he goes, Not my fault. And in the second frame, she's helping him put on his big old heavy backpack. And he says, That whole getting up early thing was totally unworkable. And then in the third frame, he runs out the door and he says, And those speed suggestion signs aren't going to help. And mom yells out the door, They're speed limits, not suggestions. And that was Zits. And in the comic strip Peanuts, drawn by Charles Schulz, looks like Lucy's having a bad day. In the first frame, slam, the door has been shut. And Lucy says, Don't anybody talk to me. In the next frame, I'm mad at the whole world. And in the third frame, don't anyone do anything or say anything. In the last frame, she's laying down in her beanbag and she says, I just want to lie in my beanbag and sulk. And that was Peanuts. And then in the comic strip Baby Blues, drawn by Rick Kirkman and Jerry Scott, Mom and Dad, Wanda and Harold, are standing on either end of their sofa. And Wanda says, First, we'll move the couch. And he goes, Well, whatever you say. Ready, set, push. That's what they do in the second frame. And then in the third frame, they're looking at this spot on the floor. And Wanda says, Next, we call the carpet cleaner. And Dad says, Ooh, so that's the color the floor is supposed to be. And that was Baby Blues. And in the comic strip Pickles, drawn by Brian Crane, in the first frame, Opal is sitting in her easy chair. She's got her feet up on the ottoman. And Earl comes in and says, looks over her and he says, Opal, I hate to bother you, but are you still feeling cranky? And she responds, no. And in the third frame, he goes, oh, good, but how? And then in the last frame, she holds up a tiny piece in her hand and says, chocolate. And that was Pickles, drawn by Brian Crane. And in the comic strip, Hagar the Horrible, drawn by Chris Brown, just two frames. In the first frame, there's Hagar and Lucky Eddie standing behind him and two or three other Vikings behind him. And they're looking up the hill, and the sign says, Entering Land of Giants. And all we can see is the foot and the legs and the hands of and the bottom of the chest. We can't even see the upper part of the body of this giant who's growling. And he's got this huge club in his hand. And Hagar says, Remember, they have size, but we have speed. And Lucky Eddie says in the next frame, So, we meet our maker quicker? And that was Hagar the Horrible. Well, we're almost out of time, so we ought to say happy birthday to some celebrities. The actor Ed Begley Jr. turned 76 today. And Mickey Rourke, the other actor, turned 73. The magician David Copperfield, he turned 69 today. Actress Jennifer Tilly turned 67. Comedian Molly Shannon turns 61. Singer Mark Anthony turns 57. The talk show host Tamron Hall, she turns 55 today. Comedian Amy Poehler turns 54. The rapper Flo Rida turns 46. Actress Alexis Bledel turns 44. And singer Teddy Geiger turns 37. And musician and actor Nick Jonas from the Jonas Brothers, he turns 33 today. Congratulations and happy birthday. I'm Gene, a volunteer reader with Sunsounds of Arizona, and you have been listening to the reading of the Arizona Republic, the second hour, for Tuesday, September 16th. Have a great day.